You've dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. Don't touch that dial. You're exactly where you want to be. You've landed in Juicebox Radio on CITR 101.9 FM. Or maybe you're one of our online listeners at CITR.ca. If you ever miss a show, you can download that podcast at juiceboxradio.com. However you came to spend this hour with us, we're glad to have you. Yes, yes, tonight's show, Juicebox, it's all about burlesque in the courthouse.
Ooh.
Join us tonight is Katrina Pacey from Pivot Legal Society and Screaming Chickens. Yes, we know the Screaming Chicken group. We have a new blood with us tonight, Joni Gioza. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Hi. Caroline and I are going to be talking about what Pivot is up to, and they're having this fabulous annual event, which is going to be held at the courthouse this year in Vancouver. Very exciting stuff, so stay tuned to find out all about that. We're going to be taking calls as well, so feel free to call in and contribute to the conversation we're having tonight, and that's at 604-822-2487. So it is great to have both of you on the show. Thanks for coming all the way out to UBC on this windy Wednesday night. So, Katrina, can you give our listeners a brief rundown of some of the projects that Pivot Legal Society has been involved with, just so the listeners get a bit of a framework of what Pivot's about?
Sure. So Pivot's a legal human rights organization in the downtown east side, and our focus is on a number of big policy areas. So I work predominantly on issues relating to sex work and law reform and policy reform relating to sex work and sex workers. We do a lot of work on housing and homelessness. We do a lot of work on policing and police conduct in the downtown east side. We have a new area we're looking at, which is looking at parenting and child apprehension in the downtown east side and the rates of child apprehension. Right. And then we also do a lot of work around drug policy and addiction-related issues in the neighborhood.
Wow, okay.
How'd you get personally involved in the society?
I have been involved in activism and worked as part of sort of the anti-violence movement for many years. And then I think it was in 2001 I was kind of looking to change gears a little bit and do something different, and heard about John Richardson, who's our executive director, who was starting this really interesting and turned out to be quite amazing organization in the downtown east side called Pivot that really was going to use the law strategically to help the most marginalized people. So I got involved pretty close to the beginning of its beginning.
Oh, that's cool. So how long? When was that?
And that was in, John started it in 2000, and then I got involved in 2001.
I thought it was about 7 years. I was guessing around that, 2000, yeah.
That's right.
About seven years, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and it, right back then, it was sort of an unfunded one-man show, really, and so it was a pretty neat time to get involved.
Wow, well, you've been highly committed for quite some time, like a long time, giving a lot to people in Downtown Eastside and to the causes that you're talking about and things like that. I know a little bit about Pivot just in knowing John for, I don't know, quite well for a few months there, getting to know his company and him. So it's fascinating what's going on down there, and I'm really, really impressed. And when he told me about this event you guys are holding, I was so super excited, and I was like, is there any way you can have that beautiful woman that yeah. I met that I know does the sex work stuff, and could she come on, and the burlesque performer that's going to be on, and can you guys do this tonight? And I was super excited, so I'm really glad you're here, and thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, right, Caroline, what's next?
I was going to ask, how do you find the work that Pivot does? Can you give me an example in terms of sex work, how it's affected somebody? Can you give me, without breaking confidentiality, like an example, like paint this picture?
Yeah, I mean, what we try to do is work really strategically on behalf of groups or populations. So we don't do a lot of kind of individual one-on-one advocacy, but we have worked with sex workers who have had issues. Maybe a sex worker who's running her business from her home and her landlord catches wind of that. And so we've done some work around housing issues for sex workers that are trying to run a business and do it from home, which is actually, in many ways, the only legal way to do sex work. So we've been in a position where we've been able to, or tried to kind of assist them with housing issues that have arisen as soon as someone finds out they're involved in sex work. So that's one example of kind of individual advocacy. But what we try to do more generally is change conditions for all sex workers by taking on strategic litigation or law reform issues that would affect all of sex workers, because they all could use some help, that's for sure.
Definitely.
Well, we're going to get onto that for sure in a little bit. I have a lot of questions about sex work and the law, and just the whole notion of not just decriminalizing but legalizing and that kind of thing. So we're going to get on that in a minute.
How are you finding the work's affecting just people in general in Vancouver, not just in the downtown east side, but when people are hearing about the work that you're doing, what's the general reactions you're getting? Or is it just very diverse, or...?
I think what we hear is that Pivot kind of has an impact on a couple of levels, and one is what I hear is that people feel really reassured to know that Pivot is there, that it just really gives people a sense of support and kind of empowerment as a community and validation as a community, that there is a strong sort of voice working with them and on their behalf in terms of their sort of most pressing issues. So I think there's a sense kind of in terms of the community at large. And then I think there's sort of more tangible results that we may have seen around, like David Eby's work keeping, you know, certain hotels open and basically saving people's housing and the kind of work that he does, which has really immediate and, you know, critical kind of immediate outcomes.
I have to ask this before we go on. I didn't put in the questions tonight, but what does Pivot stand for? And why did you guys choose that name?
Pivot is not an acronym, but it is a symbol for change. So John Richardson thought of it early on as kind of a pivotal point. So a pivot as being a place of change or a place of transition. And also the idea that if you can use a lever, you can apply small amounts of pressure and strategic points to create a significant amount of change. So it has kind of John's math and physics background behind it to a certain extent, which I don't totally understand, but conceptually it's about transformative change.
I like that.
Yeah.
What are the annual bashes all about? How long have you been having them right from the beginning, since 2000? Or is this like, because you've obviously done these parties in the past, kind of the end of the year?
Yeah, it's been ever evolving, and this year is definitely going to be different, and I think probably the most exciting. It's our fifth year.
Oh, nice.
And they started out, our first one 5 years ago was small and kind of intimate.
Where was it?
It was held at one of our supporters' homes, actually, and it was a small group of invited people, and we did have auction items at that, because there's an auction every year where we, you know, it is a fundraiser. We try to raise some money. And it's evolved every year as it's grown, but also as we've sort of explored different ways to attract people. And this year, I think it has kind of a subversive aspect to it. Last year, we had street performers. So it was called a Busker's Ball. So we really acknowledged kind of the talent that's on the street. And that's obviously consistent with our philosophy. I think this year is even better.
Yes, go ahead.
No, it's good. Julia, go, because you're bursting at the seams to ask a question, so why don't you?
Well, I guess I want to talk a little bit about the event. Like, what are some of the highlights? You've got the auction. So what are some of the things that you might auction at this particular event? Because and we have Joni Gyoza as the poster girl on the front of this beautiful flyer, A Passion for Justice, the 5th Annual Pivot Auction. So these auctions seem to be a big part of it. And what is that about? What are the items? And
yeah, I mean, it's
pretty, a little bit of highlights.
It's pretty diverse, really. And we have, a lot of generally accessible kind of stuff like hotel spa packages and holidays and things like that. Last year we had one of the items was, just to show you kind of how some of the more unique items, we had an erotic photo shoot. You could have a photographer come and do a private session with you and your partner, and that was one of the items. And then we've got, clothing and art and photography. And so I'd say overall, we try to keep it stuff that's affordable, but also really, interesting stuff that gets donated by our supporters.
Very nice. And appeals to most people as well, which sounds really cool. Now, you've got this special performance by the Screaming Chickens, which is a comedy burlesque troupe. And we have had the president, CEO, and vice president.
That's right. We've had Norm and we've had Melody on.
Norm and Melody, yes, yeah. On the show. And they were really interesting guests. And anyone getting the podcast, you can just go back into the history and pull up that one as well. And so, Joni Gyoza, I have seen you perform before at the International Burlesque Fest last year. And I know that you're heading that this year as well, aren't you? You're sort of a big manager in that.
I'm helping to organize that, definitely. So right. That's exciting. I've taken little baby steps and have progressively gotten more involved in the burlesque community. So for me, this is one of the big highlights to come and perform for Pivot this year, because their work means so much. I can't speak as highly enough of them, because I think that when we were speaking earlier, what does the work of Pivot mean to the wider community? I'd say for people on the street that are challenging, they are critical of what's going on in our legal system and challenging the status quo, but thinking it's such, how do you change that? And it's so valuable to have people that are actually on board and working towards change, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk more about burlesque and comedy in the second half of the show. I definitely want to chat with you about all that. Love the burlesque, of course. We have lots of different shows on burlesque, so.
But I think it makes sense, just since you do a lot of work in terms of with sex workers, in terms of Pivot, that having an event featuring women using burlesque for empowerment, it doesn't surprise me at all. I think it's really cool. Because there's a lot of organizations such as PACE, which stands for those listeners out there, Prostitution Alternatives, Counseling and Education. They just did their exotic sex expo at the Penthouse. And my own charity, Beauty Night, has had pole dancing for fitness performances to raise funds. But what I find very intriguing is, how did you manage to convince the courthouse to agree to let you have the event there?
Well, I think that the courthouse, we held our event there last year, and I think there's a lot of support among the legal community for the work that Pivot does. I think it's seen as really important. So I think generally it's accepted, and they really wanted to support Pivot and have allowed us to use the law courts in, which is quite a traditional venue, really, in many respects. I mean, it's where judges and senior counsel and all these people go to have lunch, while they're in court. And so it has kind of quite a traditional atmosphere. And so I think just having Pivot there is subversive in itself, because Pivot is really challenging a lot of what we think is, normal lawyering or normal expectations of the law. But then to have the Screaming Chickens there as well just takes it an extra step.
So would you say lawyers are more open-minded than the average person?
No.
Just curiosity.
No, but I think
I had to ask that question.
Yeah, I think I think that Pivot is having a really important kind of educational role in the legal community as well as the community more broadly.
Nice. In your opinion, are people becoming more open-minded?
In society, around, for example, you're doing this fundraiser at the courthouse, which involves burlesque, which, I mean, for those listeners who don't know about burlesque, there's some nakedness that are involved. I mean, there's pasties and there's like little hot pants and stuff. generally, it's a pretty nudie kind of thing, and it's cheeky and it's sort of a very sexy dance thing.
And but it's got its roots from vaudeville too, so it's very comedic and very funny.
Very comedic and funny.
Can be really entertaining.
Julie
and I are bumping ahead in a good way here.
I'm so close to Carolyn, I'm hitting her earphones. What I find interesting is, okay, so this event is happening, and I think this is very, very advanced for society in Vancouver, because we are such a, I think, a very close-minded, sex-negative society in Vancouver, personally. There's a lot of this underground, which I belong to, a big part of the underground scene, which is obviously very sex positive, and there's lots of, you know, cool sex parties that happen in Vancouver, mm-hmm. lots of burlesque going on, lots of sex work that's happening that's very open. I mean, you look at any of the community papers and 10 pages at the back are all about the sex workers that are available in the city.
I think it is changing a little bit, though, too. Just things like the underwear fair and events like that for cancers below the waist, where I don't think 10 years ago you would have caught people running around doing a run in their underwear, whereas now people actually make it where they bring their kids to the event, mm-hmm. and it's more comfortable just in general.
Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think, I think that we are evolving as a society, particularly around women's sexuality. Mm-hmm. But are we evolving fast enough? Definitely not. You know, I think there's still a lot of hang-ups. I think Vancouver is pretty prudish in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
and I think
that's what I'm trying to get at.
And yeah. so yeah, there's more openness and definitely... And there's definitely different ways in which women's groups and sex-positive groups are really pushing the envelope and challenging kind of what we think about women's sexuality. But we have a long way to go.
What do you think, Joni?
I think overall, I'd agree that Vancouver's pretty prudish. But, I mean, I'm looking at Vancouver from a different set of eyes where, for the first time, I'm seeing it as a young person who was raised quite traditionally, like Vietnamese Catholic. So to me, I think Vancouver's just bursting right now. I certainly think that there's a lot more things that can happen, but I'm so cheered to see public events like the Zombie Walk. That's mm-hmm. not necessarily, you know, sex positive, but I think it's a loosening of our collars and certainly just more community-minded things like Down on Commercial Drive, Car Free Days. And I think all the community and all the people getting onto the streets and actually doing stuff goes part and parcel with changing attitudes towards sexuality as well.
Mm-hmm. And just accepting diversity, really, isn't it?
Exactly.
A big part of that. So is this part of the purpose, is to challenge the purpose of what you're doing with the Passion for Justice, the pivot auction that's coming up? What is the date anyway? We haven't even mentioned it once yet. November 8th. We'll give you more information later, listeners, about how you can find tickets and all that good stuff. So is the part of the purpose of this fundraiser to challenge how people perceive burlesque? Like, you've added burlesque into it, and women involved in other types of sort of sex work? I mean, separate question, but mm-hmm. what is that? What's going on with that?
Well, I mean,
motivations,
I think...
there.
I mean, I can tell you that sort of my entry into the whole sex work issue really does come from, you know, a kind of the saddest place, which is really about the kind of rates of violence and exploitation that happen in the sex industry and the fact that sex workers, I think the law really creates a barrier to sex workers' empowerment, to improving conditions for themselves.
Are we talking about sex workers in general or sex workers that are what you'd call survival sex work as opposed to escorts mm-hmm. or women who have their own homes? Like, say, for example, I don't know if you're familiar with Scarlet Lake, who mm-hmm. Was profiled in a safer sex trade, though. That was on CBC, that documentary.
I think the law, regardless of kind of what aspect of sex work you're involved in, I think the law creates barriers to trying to carry out your occupation in whatever way you'd like. So okay. I think for even people like Scarlett, who really have been able to ply their trade and do it successfully and do it and create all sorts of safety in the context of their work, I think there's still barriers because of the law. And so, you know, so that's the place that we kind of come at this, is really from that kind of human rights angle. The bigger picture really is the other picture is really around women's sexuality and really the fact that sex workers really do push the boundaries of what we expect from women and what we expect from women in society and what we think is kind of an acceptable sexual relationship. So I think that the sort of next level is really to look at sex workers as potentially having sex workers as sex professionals potentially contributing or mm-hmm. really could contribute and do contribute to us becoming a more sex positive community.
Yes, absolutely. And I also think that there's a lot... one of my biggest arguments for sex trade workers, specifically ones that are involved in, you know, the actual act of sex and sexual healing or whatever you might want to call it, intercourse, oral sex, body work, that kind of thing. I think one of the greatest gifts that they give us, and I think it's a society, and I thank the goddess all the time for them, is that I think they prevent a lot of rapes and a lot of, you know, people that really want to have sex can't find a way to have it and would maybe rape or sexually assault, and they have an outlet where they can actually make a phone call and get their needs met. So I think that's very protective. I mean, that's one of my biggest arguments for the gift that is given from sex trade workers. So what are your thoughts on that?
It's I think clients are really a misunderstood population. Mm-hmm. They're definitely, like, if you were to look at the spectrum of who clients are, you know, they're definitely, you know, those who are violent and predatorial, and we definitely see that, and we don't have to look much farther than the Downtown East Side to...
They've got that bad date sheet.
Yeah,
that just makes me shudder.
And I mean, it's just horrific to see what sex workers have to go through and hopefully survive, and sometimes they don't survive. And then you really, you know, realize that not all clients are like that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of clients turn to sex workers for all sorts of, like, really important reasons. They need a sexual outlet. Some of them may have really paralyzing shyness, or, you know, almost... they almost have disabilities around their sexuality, or they feel really limited, or you know, so for whatever reason, they need a professional to assist them. And why would we as a society say that they can't do that? Why should an adult woman not be able to provide that service? Mm-hmm. And why should an adult male who needs assistance, support, sex care, mm-hmm. sexual healing, whatever it is, mm-hmm. not be able to access that?
Or mm-hmm. the other way around, too. Why can, you know, women not purchase sex from, you know, male sex workers if they'd like to? It's challenging, that whole attitude that we have generally around sex once and for all. We have, mm-hmm. I think, very set attitudes as to what's where you can go to have sex, what's acceptable in a sexual context and whatnot. And I think it's all to be able to step back and say, you know, I have the right to choose, and it's mm-hmm. not a good, it's not, nobody needs to shake their finger at me and that, and creating a safe, mm-hmm. create a safe context where everyone can access that is mm-hmm. fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I also think thinking on the homosexual front, I find, you know, especially, I don't know, the homosexual males that I know, they especially utilize the sex trade for their needs as well, because there's so much sex negativity and homophobia that, you know, perhaps a lot of bisexual males, which, believe mm-hmm. me, I know so many bisexual males.
You know,
it's crazy.
More than anybody else I know.
It's insane. Well, they all just come out to me because I'm open, and I like bisexual
awesome.
Males. So I'm like, you know,
you're easy
rah,
to talk
rah,
to.
Rah. So anyway, they tell me often about how their first experiences have been with sex trade workers, because they were, you know, in the straight world and all this business, and so then they started realizing that they have this other sexuality that they'd like to explore and no outlet to do that in. Mm. And so, again, mm-hmm. a beautiful gift and opportunity for people to express themselves and to enjoy life to the fullest, as we say. So,
well, there can be a lot of safety in that relationship because mm-hmm. it's somewhat anonymous. Mm-hmm. It's confidential. It's limited to whatever you want it to be. So, you know, that relationship can be quite unique, actually, the relationship between a sex worker and a client. Mm-hmm. And if it's safe for both parties and everybody's consenting and adults and participating willingly, then why should the law, you know, limit that or mm-hmm. say that that's not okay, or why should society condemn that?
Yeah. I've noticed in the last 5 years there's been an increase of transgendered clients, just in terms of sex workers. I call them clients because it's Beauty Night. We have a lot of survival sex workers that come in. But have you noticed that, just in terms of, and have their rights come up a lot as well in terms of being transgendered and just in regards to being in the trade? Just there's more service providers now available on the East Side, so I'm finding we're seeing more of them down there.
I don't know exactly about demographics or okay. sort of those rates, but I do know that transgender people involved in sex work have, you know, face. I'm not sure if they face particularly high rates of violence, but they do definitely face, you know, particular, obviously, discrimination and that kind of thing. And I definitely hear about incredible rates of violence that they experience. So it's a really important community to work with.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about the history slash relationship about the law and burlesque and the sex work world?
I don't know much about the history of burlesque, so I can't really comment too much on that. And all I can summarize the history of laws around sex work as not much has changed. And so we've had, the laws have adapted ever so slightly, but
what are they, just in general?
Yeah, sure. So the actual act of prostitution, the exchange itself, is legal.
Okay.
Has never actually been a criminal act to exchange sex for money or compensation of any kind. What Canada's all...
Well, half the wives and everything in the world would be... wives and girlfriends would be, like, breaking the law almost every time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Point. Yeah, it's... Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. How would you ever define that, right? Sex for compensation, right?
Yeah. Take me out for a nice dinner, I'll give you a blowjob. Now, do I get breaking the law on that one? I don't know.
Yeah.
I've broken the law millions of times.
I've did it too many.
I said it out loud. Oh, darn.
I've did it too many starving actors, so I can't go there. I'm usually the one who pays, so does that make me
John,
a John?
That makes you the John, honey.
I think it does. I guess I have been a John all my life.
So what Canada's always done instead is criminalized almost everything surrounding that exchange. So communicating for the purposes of prostitution in a public place, so being in public and talking about prostitution for the purpose of engaging in it is illegal. Running any type of a body house, which would be more commonly known as a brothel, is illegal, and that could involve just two people working out of an apartment together. It could include one sex worker using her apartment repeatedly for prostitution. It becomes a brothel, and is that's a criminal act. And procuring, which is commonly known as pimping, or maybe more generally known as pimping, but actually just means facilitating or managing someone else's sex work, is also criminal activity. And so obviously the third law, the procuring law, is there for, a valid reason, and that's because we'd like to protect people from exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that it limits sex workers from being able to work together. So if you had two, three, four sex workers who wanted to work collaboratively to create some safety in their workplace or just create a community, they're actually prohibited from doing that. So
Joni, you look like you want something to say. You want to say something?
Add something? Yeah.
I was going to say, I often, the whole act of Screaming Chicken Theatrical Society performing burlesque in the courthouse tickles me to death, because if anybody's aware of the history of burlesque, I think burlesque has evolved with so many, back and forth punches from the law that it's been, it just tickles me to death that now we're being able to do our little pasty dance right in the courthouse, because I think with respect to burlesque itself has had quite the history of women's sexuality in performance right on stage, and the back and forth that society has with whether or not to push it away or to stigmatize it. And we've seen it earlier in the century when I think it was Lydia Thompson and her British Blondes first came over to America from England, and they created, I think that was what, in the early 1900s, and they created such a stir just, walking around in tights, and that was just straight up tights and women's sexuality. And then when we saw burlesque rise in the 20s and 30s, when it was kind of the golden age of burlesque in a way where burlesque was in the theaters, people were drawn to the theaters. And I think, I'm not sure if it was the same then. I've seen it quoted in some books, although I can't verify that. The audiences back then were women and men, as it is in modern days, where it's a lot of women in the audience, being witness to
celebrating other women's sexuality, witnessing it and celebrating it, for sure.
Exactly.
There's always been a big draw, for sure, in burlesque, I think, of women in the audience.
And little instances where the law has been involved in burlesque is probably in the 30s, where burlesque was pushed out of the theaters. It used to be, on the theaters in New York on Broadway.
On Broadway, yeah.
And there were all the public morality councils and a lot of public pressure to clean up New York, as it were. So a lot of burlesque theaters got shut down in the late 30s, just for you know, it was.
And that's when burlesque was given the bad name that it now, it still kind of fights against today. I think it's obviously getting better now. It's different in the last 10 years, but definitely between the 30s and the 80s or so, it was considered, like, you know, the same as stripping and whatever. What do you want to call it? I hate using the word stripping, but anyway.
They call themselves dancers, but... Yes,
right.
Yeah.
And I found this hilarious quote. In 1951, Lily St. Cyr, one of the biggest burlesque dancers of the time, was actually arrested and charged with, and I quote, behavior that is immoral, obscene, and indecent. And they say that the theater is made to stink with the foul odor of sexual frenzy. And that just, you know, gives you an idea
of the attitudes
at the time, you know.
No kidding. No kidding. So. We have so much to chat about, definitely. We haven't even gotten through half the questions. So I think let's take a little short break here.
I think I need a little bit of cool water after that statement.
So?
The frenzy. We'll be right back, and we welcome your calls at this time. So if you want, give us a shout. We're at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. You are in Juice Box on Vancouver's CITR 101.9 FM. We'll be right back.
Well, I'm at your house, and I'm making a list. The couch where we kissed, the window we missed. No wonder if it's all just meaningless. Of course it is, you don't even exist. But it's a long, long drive with dark on all sides. Just us in the car, I've carved out a head. But it's my thoughts for the space, but I'm staying quiet. Sadness I felt now replaced by the feeling that it all works out. I don't worry now, never wonder how. So we're at my house, but we are still talking. I'm sleeping upstairs, my body just walks in. And you take the drive back, I'm covered in care. Mother waits in for me, worrying where have I been.
Juice Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th. From 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies, WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
Welcome back to Juicebox Radio. We're going to be talking more about burlesque in the courthouse, where, why, and when. I think we definitely need to know, but first, our juice berries. The Vancouver East Cultural Centre invites you to support Wish Drop-In Centre by attending Belonging, a Curious production on October 31st at The Culch on Venables. The performance will follow by a reception hosted by the Wish Drop-In Centre, which stands for Women Information Safe House, which actually serves over 150 women in the downtown east side who are involved in survival sex work. So it'd be really good. And the
why are they doing the performance on Halloween night?
Because then nobody's going to go, probably. So we have to encourage people to go. That's why, to be utterly honest. I know that sounds really terrible, but it's true. And on October the 26th, you can experience the Radio Fitness Tickle Trunk event.
That's this Friday, right?
It is this Friday, and I'll be there. You might even actually hear me sing Flashdance upside down on a pole.
Well, this is going to be a great girls' night out, because I know the last time you did one of these events that started at Aradia and went downtown to Brandy's.
And we dressed up like schoolgirls.
Full of women. There was like a city bus full of like 50 women hanging from the rafters of the bus. So
I'm surprised we didn't get thrown off. I had a couple gymnasts upside down on the bars in the bus. It was quite entertaining as we were going over the Granville Street Bridge. But if you are interested finding out more information, check out aradiafitness.com/Vancouver.
And costumes are mandatory, of course, on Friday, but you should be doing costumes by Friday. Friday, Saturday, Wednesday. We all have to be wearing costumes.
Absolutely.
Every night. Come on now.
What are you wearing Friday night anyway?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Oh, you're getting frustrated about this.
I'm going to do a prostitute because I really think prostitutes are fabulous. A sex worker, particularly an 80s prostitute from Richard Street, like one of those ones that
the
remember
high-end
from,
ones. Yeah, I the do. High-end $500 ones. An hour.
Yeah. They looked fabulous. I always drove by finding, I mean, I was 18 and I just thought they were the most amazing looking women ever.
I wonder if this collar agrees with you or
not. Okay, well, let's just, oh no.
Which one do I hit?
Go. Just the lower one, babe. Answer the phone first.
Okay. Hello? This is the on-air line.
All right, so does this caller really have something to contribute? Are we going to? Okay. Can we put the one? Okay. Hold on. All right. Thanks for calling Juice Box Radio. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I love Vancouver because that's where I met Bill Gates in 1975 when he took the train across Canada from Harvard.
Okay, fabulous. I'm glad you like Vancouver. We're talking about sex work and burlesque tonight. Do you have anything that you want to add into that?
No. What I do want to add is I perform as a street performer with my guitar on the streets of Kingston with a license I pay for, $25 a year.
Fabulous.
In Kingston.
Right on, man.
I have to have a police check every year in order to play my guitar on the street corner. And in the city of New York, you could play guitar on the street corner. You do not need a license as long as you don't perform near a park or have a sound device. And because I play my guitar on the street corner, I am labeled a prostitute all over Kingston.
Oh, really? And so how does that make you feel?
I am degraded because I am a woman playing an instrument on the street, and there are men playing instruments on the street, and they are not labeled because they are male. And because I'm female, I'm labeled, and everybody assumes what I'm out there for an hour, I make about $10, which puts a meal on the table.
Interesting. I think it's a really interesting comment you're making about the fact that you being a female player playing your instrument on the street.
There's a lot of discrimination in this country against marginalized women.
And I would think women on
women in poverty are marginalized.
Yes,
in this
true.
Country.
That's true.
True.
That's
they
true.
Are not given credibility. They are not listened to. The authorities don't listen to them if they have a complaint. They are demoralized. And
well, hopefully Pivot will be changing a lot of that.
Yeah.
They've been working
yeah,
to change
but
a lot of
a lot of the women's movement has worked with upper and middle class women, and mostly upper class, very well educated women have been in the women's movement. But they have not, a lot of the women in lower incomes and marginalized women, and a lot of women are marginalized because they're survivors of childhood trauma. I'm a trauma shock victim.
Are you?
And
okay.
A lot of marginalized women are marginalized and on the fringes of society because they're victims of childhood sexual or physical assault.
Okay.
And that's carried with them throughout their lives.
Yeah, it's true. Thank you very much for calling and contributing your comments. I appreciate that. And hopefully Pivot can do more to fight against the marginalization of women and all the rest that you talked about. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. You have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So, interesting comments.
Mm-hmm.
True, I think a lot of them. This caller was sort of saying that she's being referred to as a prostitute as an insult, and I think in her opinion that was, but often I think a lot of sex trade workers do not have any shame at all about what they do for a living, and so we all have our own opinions about these things.
Yeah, but I don't think we have to look very far to see how much sex workers are discriminated against. The fact that being called a prostitute is an insult, I think just really is kind of such an obvious example of how sex workers face so much inequality and discrimination.
It's been that way for a long time, though.
It's true.
I mean, even when I was like 8, the boys used to call me a slut because I had breasts.
Right. You know what? I think it speaks really to the moralizing of society, and that is based from the church. And I don't mean to bash the church in any way, because I think for a lot of people it's a very important aspect of their lives
the
and their spiritual practice,
era.
Et cetera. But it is oppressive, and the church can be very oppressive. And so I think that is where a lot of this, the moral fabric of society and the fact that we are so, look down upon sex trade workers as such is based on that sort of morality and the pushing of the church and what they think is right and wrong in society. Or
it's perception.
And then, of course, people just sort of trying to respond to that and being like, well, you know, the church says this is bad and wrong and I don't want to go to hell and whatever, so I'm going to follow what the church tells me or what have you. And then, of course, as the law speaks, people that maybe aren't religious, they listen to what the law says, and so if the law says that this is wrong, then they think this is morally wrong. And even though they're not making their own decisions about that, they're just following what's being told by, you know, the church and the law, the state and the law and the church. Sorry, rambling.
And that's okay. I almost want to ask right off the bat.
Yes, thank you. Please redirect me.
That's right, my darling. Ms. Gioza, just touching on this as a burlesque dancer, how do you find attitudes just in general? Do you tell people when you meet somebody, say you're at a cocktail party, do you tell them that you're a burlesque dancer right away? Or do you kind of feel it out a little bit first and see? Because I know as a pole dancer, I don't tell people right away. I kind of feel it out. If somebody I don't feel comfortable with asks me what I do, I just tell them I teach modern dance.
I use it. I mean, for me, I'm comfortable with it, but I think I do a little bit of feeling out for the context. And I think one of the biggest things for me is just to recognize that, you know, I'm proud of it. I love burlesque. I love the opportunity to talk to people and engage in a dialogue where it's something that I can come upon. I could, it's kind of like a neutral, positive space that I can chirp about burlesque on. So I'm pretty comfortable with it, and it was big for me to invite my people at work. I work at St. Paul's Hospital, so I invited my staff, and everybody's been incredibly supportive. So,
inviting your staff to a Passion for Justice,
yes,
you mean
indeed.
The event that you're going to be performing at?
Event.
The poster child, this poster that you should see on the is it online? This poster that we're talking about, people can check it out.
Yeah, it's on the Pivot website, which is pivotlegal.org.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you can also get your tickets from pivotlegal.org and also from ticketweb.ca. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't say how much they are, of course, on CITR, but they're very reasonable.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very value-added evening, if I can say so myself, with the Screaming Chicken Theatrical Society is performing. It'll be myself, Miss Melody Mangler, April O'Peel, Precious Metal, Lola Lockhart, and the wonderful Miss Fanny Fabulous. It'll be hosted by Evil Bastard, the infamous Evil Bastard.
Is this Norm that we're talking about?
No, it's not. Mr. On. He does all of our backstage magic. And there's also going to be an illusionist extraordinaire roving in the crowd, Mr. Rick Mearns.
This is going to be a lot to look at.
It's going to be a lot to look at. There's going to be food. There's going to be a bar. So I think it's just an absolutely fabulous early evening for anyone who's coming out.
Yes, that's great. Good. And people should be bringing their credit cards anyway, just for all the auction items, just in case, or checkbook.
And I think most forms of payment will be accepted.
Sorry, I know we can't talk about what it is. Oh, guys,
I just got that. Sometimes, yes, I'm slow.
I'm just not going to say it. I want to, but I'm not going to say it.
Don't.
Okay, so...
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right, so what made you decide to perform at this event? I know you sort of spoke to this earlier, but let's just reiterate that for the listeners.
I think seeing the intersection of burlesque as women's sexuality empowerment, and also burlesque is so traditionally a form of satire and comedy, and similar in the way that clowns are able to poke fun at and kind of challenge status quos in a very non-alarming way, I think burlesque is able to do that with a very sexy flavor. So for me, it was such, you know, absolute brilliance to be able to work that into supporting Pivot with all of the challenging kind of change work that it does.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel that the attitudes of the law are contradictory and ironical towards female sexuality?
Absolutely. I think it's very patronizing, and it limits women and limits people, period, not just women.
I was just going to ask about male sexuality as well.
Their ability to just make decisions as adults.
In what way?
I think of different things that I've heard of in the news, like John Ince, I think is his name, from the Art of Love.
John Ince,
And his campaign to send out flyers and being censored by Canada Post for saying that it's... What is it? What was the word they used? Sexually explicit material.
Lube. They had lube on there, and a few other words that were. I think he had penis. I'm not sure, but it was a really quite a natural, normal sort of word. It wasn't like he was saying anything disgusting or whatever.
I wish I could have seen that.
It was a big, big fight. Still ongoing. The oppression that goes on is pretty intense. Our city, which is very... Mm-hmm. What was the word that Katrina used earlier?
Prudish,
yes. I think that's a good way to describe Vancouver. So what about these attitudes of the law? What about male sexuality? Like, let's talk about that for a little bit. Because we've talked a lot about female sexuality. So can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think for both genders, for both men and women, we've seen some developments and some change. But I think, you know, in the same way that we were just talking about how the term prostitute or sex worker or whore and those types of terms are seen as an insult, is, you know, you don't have to look very far to see the term gay also being used as an insult. And I think there's been definitely some social developments around that and some increasing awareness. But the law also, you know, around, you know, homosexuality has definitely made some changes. And, you know, we look at gay marriage and that kind of thing. But, you know, we still have struggles like, you know, we don't have to look too far back at the Little Sisters bookstore case where, you know, every time Little Sisters has a shipment coming across the border from the U.S., you know, all of a sudden the Canadian border's finding all sorts of reasons to rip those packages open and decide to send them back to the U.S. and not allow them across the border.
Yeah.
And the kind of discrimination and censorship that, you know, that in that case it was a lot of gay male material was facing, that, you know, if it was... a shipment that was headed to Chapters, it certainly wouldn't have faced the same kind of scrutiny.
Of course, I wonder, did they start reading it first before they sent it back?
That's right. How far did they have to delve into it before they discovered that it needed to be censored?
They have to research all of it.
Cover to cover. On their break while they're in the bathroom.
Exactly.
So
those bisexual males you're talking about?
Probably.
Just checking.
So how...
Actually, I think one of my exes was a border guard, too. Sorry, also.
I have some comments I'm going to refrain from saying again. So how does Pivot aim to change the law that affects personal sexuality and empowerment, and how is this reflected on a larger scale? What do you think Pivot's about around that?
Well, I mean, I think what you mentioned before was sort of the hypocrisy that we see in the law. And, you know, one example of the sort of most obvious hypocrisy is the fact that, you know, that we allow adults to decide who they're going to have sex with, and consensual sexual activity is obviously all fine and good, unless money's exchanged. And then all of a sudden the law treats it entirely differently and applies all of these rules and laws to it. We have, you know... no shortage of businesses operating in the Lower Mainland and in Vancouver that are licensed by the city, that everybody knows full well what's happening in those businesses.
And rub and tugs, et cetera.
And, you know, and the city allows it to happen, and those businesses continue, and they're busy and they're thriving, and yet, and not being cracked down on by the police, and yet you have, you know, women working on Kingsway or working in the downtown east side that are getting busted, you know, every single night. And so you see, you know, on one level, this quasi-legal indoor setting, which, you know, we turn a blind eye to, and then the minute it's visible and on the street, all of a sudden you have, you know, these incredible rates of crackdowns and enforcement. So
have you noticed a change, this is slightly off topic, in regards to just when you mentioned Kingsway, and I'm thinking of Franklin Street. Are you hearing anything about the kiddie stroll? I remember when I started Beauty Night, there was, it was pretty easy to find kids sometimes between 6 to 10 years old. And I was just curious, because I haven't heard as much about that in the last few years, if you'd noticed that it's lessened a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know that I can really say what's happening, you know, in terms of the number of children and youth involved in prostitution. Mm-hmm. I just want to say that Pivot isn't certainly advocating for decriminalization of those laws, that there are laws that prohibit purchasing services from children and youth, and that Pivot is not saying that those laws should change, that it should remain illegal to buy those services. I think that the issues facing children and youth involved in prostitution are huge, and I don't think as a society we've really figured out how to deal with it. So I don't know if the numbers have gone up, but I would be very surprised if they've gone down.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
I think they just move them inside. That's what's happening. I mean, they might have one or two, but they swoop them away all the time. This is what I've heard. They just, you know, they're constantly monitored, and then if there's anybody crawling around that looks like it could be a cop, they just swoop them out and take them away and move them somewhere else, or just take them for that night. And I mean, it's just horrendous. And I think there's a lot more movement inside, thanks to the internet. You can find kids online. So one of the downfalls of what we've done with this free world that we're creating on the net. So I think with the last little bit of the hour here, what is the Charter Challenge?
So I'm counsel with another lawyer, Joe Arve, for an organization called the Downtown Eastside Sex Workers United Against Violence Society, and it's a sex worker-driven and run organization in the Downtown Eastside of current and former sex workers. And we have filed a challenge, which basically the gist of it is we're arguing for complete decriminalization of adult sex work. And the gist of the argument is essentially that those laws violate the charter rights of sex workers, so their basic human right to live free from violence, to have their security protected, to be free, you know, for their liberty interest to be protected, but also for them to really gain true equality in society, that as long as these laws are in place, they'll remain discriminated against. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you want to add something, Johnny?
No, think it's brilliant. brilliant framing.
Yeah, it's an interesting argument. We've had you know, a few shows around this topic, and again, you know, as Scarlett Lake so eloquently spoke to in her interview, is that really anybody and everybody is deserving of protection in their workplace and you know, their rights and freedoms, etc., as humans. And so it's just appalling to me what goes on still with the sex workers. I mean, they're doing their job. Let's talk about the ones that are the fully, you know, like the people that go and do the dancing, the lap dancing. There's extra services that go on in those back rooms. I mean, who's kidding who?
It depends which club, actually.
Well, but, sure, yeah. Whatever. But the point is that it does happen. And these women are taking their clothes off for money, which I think is sex work. I consider that sex work. You don't?
I don't. You know me about the whole penetration factor, so even though I would consider a blowjob sex work if it was being
penetration purchased. Of the mouth, that is not.
But that's different.
Although, wait a minute, we're talking about oral sex on women. There's penetration of the tongue, if you're lucky.
Yeah, good point, actually. Very, very good point. Tongue point.
Right, so I guess the dancers aren't getting penetrated except from the eyes. The eyes are penetrating.
This is true.
But if they even notice them when they're having their beer. A lot of guys have meetings there at the Cecil at lunchtime.
Why do they do that, do you think? They're not worried about their wives walking in on their meeting? Because they're not going to be there. And then, like, why do they have them there?
I don't know. Maybe it's supposed to be a macho thing, although that might be a whole other show.
This is a topic for another show.
Actually, I do have another question in regards to the event, because Julia's looking at me like, now what? What do you say something really dirty,
and I just realized.
Say something really dirty. Of course, that intrigues everybody.
Nice to the lawyers and the lovely burlesque dancers from Screaming Chicken that are here, and I don't want to freak them out too much.
I've had a totally different connotation. I had some X-rated thoughts going on about the event, so
okay.
I will just put those
Let's
away.
Let's ask them. What about... Ask Caroline.
I was going to ask something completely non-related to that, except for in regards to the silent auction. What type of things did you want to do with the monies raised?
Well, we usually, you know,
very good question. Thank you for taking us off the sex topic. This is good.
Well, it is a sex show, so the sex topic isn't a bad thing necessarily.
But no, that's a very good question. Yes, the money's raised. Very important for the Charter Challenge, I'm sure.
Yeah. So we have, you know, we usually don't have the funds from our auction go specifically directed into any particular campaign because really all of the campaigns need support, and so it generally will go into kind of providing support to pivot. Our infrastructure that supports all of the campaign work that we do. So this year, because of the connection between burlesque and sex work, we're definitely going to be promoting the Charter Challenge and really talking about the Charter Challenge and hoping that people direct some support in that direction. But overall, really, the money from this fundraiser in particular is generally supporting our work.
Are any of the clients from the Charter Challenge going to be there?
They
like some of the ones that are out of the sex trade.
We do invite individuals from the Downtown East Side to come to the event, and hopefully they'll come and show up if they feel comfortable. It's a little bit tricky, to be honest. The Law Courts Inn is not a very accessible environment to anybody.
That's true. And a lot of the clients in the East Side
may not feel totally comfortable coming there, and so we do invite, but we also provide a little bit of a warning that it may not be the most comfortable environment because it is a courthouse and they may have, you know, some experience there that wasn't a positive positive memory, but we would hope that once they get inside the Law Courts Inn and they see what's happening, it becomes a positive experience.
Fair enough.
I think that's important. I mean, you know, it's always a good idea to go into something that was not positive and make a positive memory because it will change your mind, right? Your mind gets changed by that. So
that's true. Although I was thinking of usually when I see a policeman other than Dave Dixon, who's on our board for Beauty Night.
My blood starts boiling. You're right. It never gets better.
I feel guilty like I've done something wrong, which is probably why I have sexual fantasies about firemen instead. But when I went to Toronto, their cops there are really hot. That's one reason to volunteer for Beauty Night there.
We're talking about volunteer. You know what I did? I forgot to mention the woman who did that song.
I was just thinking about that.
Which is one of the reasons I like to do it before we go to break.
But you're remembering now before the end of the show. It's better than after the podcast is up.
So I met this lovely young thing at Toby's on Commercial, like 12th.
Oh.
And her name was September. And that song, she was called Patchwork and Sleep. And you can find out more about September and her music at myspace.com/patchworkandsleep, all one kind of word together.
Nice.
So, yeah, and she told me it was really nice acoustic music and it would fit in well with the show. And I think it was a really perfect song for tonight. So thank you, September. And I love your name, even though it was last month. But... That was really bad. All right, Julia.
It was very entertaining, my darling. We love you. You know that.
Well, we hope you enjoyed tonight's show. I really want to thank both our guests.
Thank you so much for coming.
Fabulous. Pivot Legal Society, Katrina. What is your last name, darling?
Gyoza.
Thank you. And Joni Gyoza from Screaming Chicken. You can go and see both of these lovely ladies at A Passion for Justice, the 5th annual Pivot Auction happening November 8th at the Law Courts. And find out more at pivotlegal.org.
And don't forget your credit card. Ka-ching. Ka-ching.
So thank you. Thank you both.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Right on.
And Julie and I are going to be back next week with the Halloween edition of Juice Box. But in the meantime, I think you should stay tuned for Hans Kloss.
Hans Kloss's Misery Hour with Marion. He's a very hot man to be miserable with.
He's very hot.
And he's in the house right now. And every time he walks in, I get so excited.
I think I need some more ice to cool down my body.
Yes, let him guide you into the wee hours with his ambient collection of music and his super hot voice.
Hot.
His hotness.
I need some ice.
You'll hear him speaking later because we couldn't hear what he just said. Anyway, thanks for listening to Juicebox Radio.
And we'll be back next week.
At the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. No, 6 p.m.
I like p.m.
No! That's terrible.
It's got a nice high squeak to it. Maybe it's the pee factor.
I don't know. Just don't say p.m. PMS. You just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening. Right then.